Howdy, I'm Jeremy Rivera, your unscripted podcast host. I'm here with Marcus Smith of Cloud Trails. Let's give you a chance to introduce yourself, and I want you to focus on what you've done in your career and your experience that should make us trust you as an expert.
Wow, man, get the tough stuff out the way up front. I would say the thing that I've done that makes people trust me is I remove unnecessary stuff, man. I've been in enterprise, I've been in government organizations, and my background is industrial engineering, which is essentially like, designing business processes and removing things that customers don't pay for. So, anybody that deals with us, they get the stripped down version of how to get rid of it, because it just saves a ton of time.
I've worked a number of different enterprise level SEO contracts in the past. My most harrowing was for HCA, where they made me take a drug test and sit on site with a security guard to edit, I kid you not, 22 pages on their website. That's it. It was just editing content on their site. I could have sent it via email, they could have copied and pasted. I had to take a new test, had to check in their laptop and use it for a specific amount of time. I mean, it paid handsomely. Red tape does pay for the antics of it, pays internally to the participation, but it adds so much burden and cost. So what's been your experience in cutting through some of that red tape? What are the levers to diagnose red tape by this? And what do you need to be able to make moves that make a difference when you've got red tape in your organization?
So I would tell you, I'm gonna try to be buzzword light, but some of it comes up. Because my background is industrial engineering, one of the core, I guess, management theses is lean. And if you say that word, you're gonna get 27 different definitions of it. But the rawest definition is, when you put this task in front of a customer, would they universally be willing to pay for it? So not you, not your internal stuff, not your boss, not what you want to do. You put this in front of a customer and say, what do you value at? And it's 10 cents or zeros. Those are the types of things that you should get rid of. So for me, I know what they are because I've been in the industry for a while. The things that customers push back on when they see an invoice, why am I getting charged for your internal prioritization? Why am I getting charged for project management and stuff like that, right? You can wrestle with the customer, or you can say, 9 out of 10 customers are questioning why do they pay for them. And a lot of the times, especially in a small business, you could just get rid of it. Your employees aren't going to fight you to do more administration. So the 100% the rubric is you print this stuff out, put it in front of the customer and say, will you pay for this? And they will tell you they think it's valuable or they think it's not.
That's a pretty good guide. Of course, the rubric of the customer's always right is a hard one because honestly, there's a lot of people who would pay nothing to get everything.
Yeah, and that's, I w you're not wrong, but you have to do it, and you've probably 1,000 times with the right customer, right? Which is you got to go find who your customers are, who value you the way that you want to be valued, and then say, hey, do you think this is something that you would pay for? Notice I didn't say they're always right. What I said
Correct.
is, you stick it in front of 10 of them, if you make a list of items, you'll start to see stuff that they think they should be paying for, and you'll start to see stuff where they go, why am I paying for this? And it really is like, I mean, it's almost always administration. It's almost always paperwork. It's almost always documentation. Some of that stuff you need, we do the bare minimum to keep the business moving, but we don't do it to a point where it bleeds over to make our business more expensive or it shows up on the invoice for the customer. Because the documentation is for us to make sure we can do the work, not to charge them to do documentation to make sure we can do the work.
As someone who worked at a SaaS called Raven Tools, actually I have the mug here for Raven Tools, a well-known SEO tool, that provided mostly reporting for agencies and SEOs to report to their end client. And it was always a certain amount of conflict of which direction we took the tool of going into the minutiae of every detail, every possible thing that you could possibly report, and opening all of these channels of information versus finding a way to consolidate and display that in a concise and precise manner as possible. That, you know, because on the one extreme of it, you know, there are those super detailed clients and customers who are like, I need to know what you did on Tuesday from, you know, 9:15 to 7:15 and what the KPI was that was associated with it. But also, the reality is for most businesses, they just want to get the pulse and they want to know that you're delivering what it is that you said you would do. What's your key principle when it comes to metrics of what matters in marketing in that same vein? You know, because you can track all kinds of things. You can look at all kinds of numbers. And I personally, I could snow 50 customers with so much data, you know, all of these super impressive looking visual reports pulling from Google Search Console, calling from Google Analytics, you know, using Looker Studio templates that really just point out that one keyword came up a little bit when really the heartbeat of it was you guys lost 25% of your market. So what do you look for in terms of metrics or views of KPIs that's the through line for your own business, and then what you recommend in your conversation with your clients?
I'll give you the ones that I use for pay-per-click because they're the ones that I deal with the most and just kind of refine the most. So for me, it's always been clicks. That's what I'm paying for. It's always been top impression share because to me, that's a relevance metric. You know, we're paying, but how often are we relevant and at the top of the page and CTR for me and PPC? And then, you know, obviously, you know, conversions. So just those four, because I look at those four and go, there's enough, and we're a small business, you know, there's enough refinement in those four metrics to actually drive money into my wallet. And, you know, honestly, that's what I care about at this point. Like, there is branding in there, right? But, you know, you can't pay people with branding. So I look at those four to go, all right, these are the four that we should orient around to.
Just to touch back for CloudTrails, give me a feeling in two sentences. What's your deliverable that you're giving to your clients? What's the service specifically that you provide?
Long-term peace of mind in Salesforce.
Solid. You got that down to a single sentence.
I said it a few times, man. So yeah. And honestly, it's my background is product. I was in product, and product gives you a very raw view into what people want. You let customers talk, they very rarely talk about the stuff that you talk about internally. And as we talked to more customers, what we figured out was customers weren't looking for complexity in build. They bought Salesforce, they don't know what it does, but they you know, it's one of those things where like at a certain size, your company's gonna have some form of a CRM. And no matter which one they got, which flavor they got, they're unlikely to be experts at it. You're talking about a company 25 to 100 people, not experts at Salesforce, experts at their thing. And those types of companies know that they need the thing to work and they're not gonna be experts at it. So when you start to ask them what they want, they really want is to not feel like they got railroaded and not had a thing blow up in 3 months.
So, working within another company's ecosystem and then another company's ecosystem off of that, you know, you've got, you know, well, in two facets, I think we can still, it's not 100%. I would say we can still treat mostly Google paid results and Google organic results as mostly still separate. So, you've got these two facets, and then you've got, you know, HubSpot, and that's another ecosystem that you're working in. And then obviously also if you're doing paid ads elsewhere, that's another ecosystem. How do you balance finding a deliverable when so many of the variables that impact your outcome aren't under your control? You're operating out of multiple black boxes.
So I'll break it down in three ways. We are a Salesforce consultancy. So we got Salesforce, you got Google Ads, and you got Microsoft Ads. I mean, those are the three things that you just mentioned that we would be dealing with. Salesforce, there's two ways. If you derive a lot of business from Salesforce, and that's called co-selling, you have to know how to play that game. We played that game very successfully in COVID because we're a flat price vendor who focuses on delivery. And that's just not what a lot of people do. But to be honest, we lost a partner who did a majority of that. And then when I really looked at what it takes to do that, I moved the business away from it because it doesn't, in my mind, it doesn't end up being something that's scalable. I mean, it's a lot of brunches and lunches and demos and talking about pricing and code. Like it's a ton of things that you cannot replicate because they're so independent of an individual person. So when it comes to Salesforce, you know, really have to make sure I don't break their rules so they don't kick me out. But that's pretty much all that's left with them is don't break their rules so they don't kick me out. With Microsoft and Google, I think I am a person that understands that you have to play by someone else's rules until you don't. So I need things from Microsoft and Google. I have to understand how they want things to work. Now, I've had my Microsoft account suspended before. That wasn't fun. I've had ads taken down before. It's not fun. But I also understand that I'm a small business. So the thing I try to do is focus on what I need from a particular platform, because you're going to need something from some platform when you start. And then go, okay, if I don't want to need things from these mega platforms long term, what do I do about it? So up front, I just have to go, what are the rules? You know, and break a couple and get suspended and come back and go, okay, don't do that. But over the long haul, then I go, all right, a little bit longer, a lot tougher. What do I do to need less over time?
One of my friends, Michael McDougall, said that ChatGPT is your least trained customer support representative. What are you seeing in the marketplace? Because I see it in two facets. There's tools and how we leverage them to make our own organization better. And then there's the audience impact of those potential customers using this tool, who's a robot, to come find your stuff, which you probably made with a robot, to in the end get connected with you. So you got this robot sandwich going on. What's been your through line as, you know, this new shiny object comes into the market? Is it something you're worried about? Is it something where you're seeing a lot of people distracted by it, or is it something you're making gold out of hay?
So I think that for me personally, and this is a weird thing for me. Whenever I use something, I'm not a person that goes all off into the externalities of the features. I tend to use the base product in almost every product I have. So for ChatGPT, I use it to help me structure things and to like kind of make roadmaps. Like if you look at mine, there's a bunch of roadmaps and pictures and stuff like that. And me asking it to very rigorously test my ideas. Hey, am I just being ridiculous here? You know, help me out. In terms of customers, and when I say customers, I'm talking specifically people in like 25 to 100, you know, people organization. If I've seen people use it in reference to us, they will use it for quick things where they're just trying to get information. And I'm talking maybe 5% of our customers do that. I say, hey, look, I'm just trying to get some general stuff and I'll go to this for it. I'm not afraid of AI in relation to our core value because someone's asking for Salesforce to be configured, or someone's asking for Salesforce to reflect their business process. And to be honest with you, process and pretty heavy quotes when you're talking about small and medium-sized businesses. And AI needs pretty clean input to give you some kind of output. And a lot of times when someone is giving you an input, you know, off the top of their head. So someone's giving you an input off the top of their head, there's a ton of interpretation and asking questions, then demo, then, you know, iterate, da 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 da, that I'm just not really afraid of an AI doing right now. But I don't want to be a dinosaur and say, hey, it won't come, right? Because, you know, that's, you know, telephone, cell phone, stuff playing in your head, you know, probably is coming. But right now, I look at it and go, I just think it's like a ninth order thing for ChatGPT or AI in general to come wipe us out of the core value of what we do.
Fair enough. What in your conversations over the past 6 months has been the existential bogeyman for the businesses you're working with and consulting for?
I'd say Agentforce. And the reason I would say Agentforce is because Salesforce created it, and then Salesforce has a massive marketing push behind it. So when Salesforce gets behind something, everybody in the company gets behind it. Well, if everyone in the company is behind it and your representative is pushing it to you, you feel the need to do something or ask some questions or look at a video or something like that, right? But if you're talking about something like Agentforce, what I have to tell you is your data ready? Do you actually know what you want to do? Are you comfortable with it being 70% accurate while it gets to 97% accurate? And though, as you can imagine, people just, they start to trail off as you say, clean up your data. Are you comfortable with it not being 100% correct? So we talk about that a lot because it gets pushed to people a lot. And we say, yeah, 100%. It's incredible if you're ready to do these four or five things.
Let's talk about data acquisition. It seems there's, I worked with Taplex, which is a data lake aggregator.
Data
Tableau
model.
is another multi-platform out there that ingests data and transmutes and transforms it and smashes these things together. Is it me, or does the promise never really fulfill itself of actually making any of it actually any more usable? Or you just end up with a more complicated product that needs a specific specialist to help you sort it out?
Man, I will tell you, ETL is just tough because ETL crosses multiple people in multiple departments, no matter how you're trying to do it. If you're trying to flatten out tables and then write some automation, if you're trying to use a data lake, the whole purpose of it is you're bringing stuff together from people and systems who normally don't coordinate. And the reason why I say ETL is because I did a lot of it at a consulting company, and it was sales and inventory. Well, the sales guy and the merchant guys and inventory guy, just Jupiter and Uranus or whatever, right? And then you put them in a room and they're still Jupiter and you're like nothing changed, but some kind of way you put their information together and you just have these bulls just going. So I think honestly, when you get into that, and I'm framing it all as ETL, like when you get into those discussions, it does become, are the, I don't want to call them gatekeepers, but are the people that are responsible for the historically what this data has been, are they ready for what it will be in the future? And nobody tends to talk about that until it's like, oh, it didn't work, or oh, this is much harder than it needs to be. Because now you got the shared data thing where it's like, okay, now my sales data is intermingled with my inventory data. Woo. I can't actually present that the way I want to anymore. So, what do we do now? Because I have some equally as strong person saying other stuff about my data. So I think the information is always great. But the implementation of it requires coordination that I don't think people think about before they get ready to do it.
I think you've said that a couple of different ways. What is it about an organization? Is it a lacking of like a person in a position to clean up the data? Is it just a lack of technical know-how? Is it organizational focus on getting these data sources correct in the first place? Or is it just the inherent entropy of marketing systems that, you acquire software, it has challenges, it can do this, it can't do that, it can only do this if it's set up properly. What is it about these systems that creates a scenario where they're not ready?
I think it's a lack of a shared goal. You start to get people into systems. First of all, for this man, the first word in change is no. So you roll something out new to 30 people, you get 27 versions of no and three versions of yes. All right, so 27 people got to kind of be convinced to do it or deal with it. And then if you're not very specific about how it's going to benefit everybody across the board, you just start to see people not engage. Not put their best foot forward, not do things that would make it successful because all the technology is technology. But the technology is put into place to help people do their jobs. A lot of times when you bring somebody like me in, or when you're doing a data integration period, the first thing you got to do is tell the truth about what works and what doesn't work, and then stick it in some new place that's clean. Well, the new place that's clean doesn't let you do all the old stuff that you were doing to hide what wasn't clean. Oh, okay. How does your organization deal with that? Is this person about to be in a ton of trouble now because you really get to see what they were or were not doing? Does anybody's goals change? Is there a transition period, XYZ? Just me having seen a lot of people get the technology and then go, this technology kind of pulled this curtain back on me. And then what, how do your leaders handle that the technology pulled this curtain back?
So it seems like another case where Communication is not just key, but it's king. You know, because if you're leadership and you're trying to get buy-in for it, then you have to present a clear vision. If you're bottom down and you're saying, trying to say to your boss, hey, we need to do this. We need to get this software to do this so we can meet your goals. That also is communication.
I mean, I and the most successful ones that I've seen, and I'm talking about MicroStrategy, Salesforce, AWS. I would say like the most successful implementations that I've seen, they tend to start with an understanding of what it's going to do for the people using it. Like it's very rarely like the CRO or whatever wants us to do this because people, you know, I don't care. You know, I don't mean to be funny, but it's like I'm not the CRO, but like, why am I going to put this tremendous amount of effort into changing this thing so you can make $900,000? Fantastic. But if you're legitimately bringing something in that makes whatever I'm trying to do easier or makes it better, and that's the focus, people will buy into it much faster. There's so few people are willing to, I think so few people understand that.
So it's kind of
I've seen a
like,
ton of people, I've seen a ton of people go, I'm going to make them use it. And I go, oh, yeah, have fun with that. Knock yourself out.
it seems like you almost have like opposite goals of like the people that were are within the system and then the leadership are trying to convert two different things. Like the people are trying to do the thing and they value it being easier to do that thing that they're being asked to
Yeah.
do. And the leadership is trying to get them to do the things that make money. And
Yes.
you know, there's kind of this push and pull between those two where it seems,
And
you know, if you can find that alignment, then if it's easy and if you can make the most money by correcting the system, it just seems a lot of the times there's solutions floated out, new stuff. It's always the new shiny, right? It's always the
I
new
mean,
shiny things going. Fix the our business model's problem of getting you guys to do this thing really well.
I would say for most leaders are really bad at removing wasteful things that they make. So if I'm your boss and I tell you to do something, I'm really bad at evaluating how useful it is. I want you to do it because I told you to. So if I'm the kind of person that creates a bunch of busy work, what I'm going to do is create a bunch of busy work in a new system. And I have to be able to look at it and go, man, this is a bunch of busy work. We should not do this. And you know, that's hard for a person who's clawed their way up through whatever they're doing to be the leader of all these people to go, I have systemically created a ton of work that people want to do. I've shown it to three leaders in three different companies, and they just reject it. Like you can show people numbers, and they'll just reject the idea that they have kind of systemically created a job that is not a value-producing job.
Sometimes, you know, it's the hardest truth to hear that you, as a leader, aren't that good.
It makes you a lot better if you can, because then you can go, I'm not good at this. But you know, like you said, man, it's hard for people.
Yeah, I've talked about the ego problem with, you know, my friend Matt Brooks at Esoteric, because it happens to SEOs a lot as well, of, you know, because of the black box nature of the algorithm. There certainly are things that we do that are the equivalent of, you know, putting sand in your jock strap because you won that one game that one time, you know, or, you know, like whatever weird base, you know, touch around, turn
Yeah.
around, spit three
Word.
times, sacrifice, you know, three goats at the third moon and Google will reward you type of stuff. And, you know, we have to be as marketers, as business people, ready to put ego aside. You know, like if you really care about what you do, then you have to be open to not just hearing criticism, but being able to move the ball afterwards. Like you can hear, if you just hear it, then they might as well have not said it. If you're not going to do anything with it, it's like I've worked with three or four companies and they, you know, send out these messages to their clients asking, what can we do better? How can we serve you better? Nobody who reads those actually wants to do anything other than mine that data to get the project that they thought should happen before they set up the survey.
Yeah. And then while you were saying that, I was thinking about what and my life has made me comfortable with it. I'm going to come back to the survey thing, but I did want to share this. For whatever reason, there's one activity that if I ever want to lose weight, I do. And it's running for distance. I can do everything else. I can eat right. It just doesn't come off until I start running for distance. And I'll tell you, it's you can't fake it. You ran a mile or you didn't. You ran 2 miles or you didn't. You ran a slow pace or you didn't. Like there's no fudging in it. And it's when you start, it's sobering. Because I mean, I ran yesterday at 12 minutes. You know, a couple of years ago, it was 9 minutes a mile. You know, what happened, right? But like, there's just no way to fake the result. You're the only one out there. You started to watch, you know, you stopped breathing heavy at the end or not, right? But it's just a very like, all right, you know, I ran up yesterday. I ran a mile, and I ran a mile and a half, and it was a 12-minute mile. Oh man, we got some improvement. And I think, I mean, to me, if I would take any leader who wanted to get better at it, you have to do something. Doing something that doesn't have other people in it, that's just a pure measurement of performance, is a really good way to say this is to tune your mind to, I'm here. How do I get there? I think, you know, it kind of allows me when someone's giving me feedback to go, well, I have this other thing in my life that I know I ain't world class at. So it would make sense that maybe I need some improvement over here. Like just because I know, like, I pops up on your phone. Hey, you need to improve. You're at 12-minute mile, right? But I would say for anybody who kind of struggles with that, go find something that you can do by yourself that you just have to measure and you can't lie. Or some other system is measuring for you. So you can say, all right, and then I want to get here. And the only way you can get here is to improve. There's no other way to do it.
I think I like that because there's so often, I get in these conversations about marketing, about metrics, about success in businesses. I talk to business coaches, and it really helps to remember that at the end of the day, we're all humans, except for Joe. He's a lizard. This message isn't for you, Joe, but we're all human. And if we don't apply some of the fundamental lessons that we carry through the rest of our lives to our business, if we are, getting home, just crashing out on the couch, mess everywhere, family's in disarray, it's going to end up showing up. Because then, you have a relationship with somebody else. Well, that's going to start to fray if you're not doing anything. If you're so wiped out at home, you're going to be wiped out at work. And if you're wiped out at work, you're getting wiped out at home. So there's a reflection, this is a cosplay of the concept of work, of I'm going to come to work and I will be this perfect, I will do this and da 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 da. But solopreneurs like me, freelancers, they feel it first because they carry more of the business. I think a lot of people seek out more structured positions where they can just be handed a pile of make work, busy work that they don't have to analyze twice or question, okay, why am I using this CRM to send a message to Asana, which is going to send a message into Monday? And then that Monday ticket's going to get duplicated over to Jira. And then Jira will go over to another platform for the dev who will go into a queue. And it's like 25 steps. I don't need to worry about that. All I do is push the button.
My button.
So if you're going in and, and if you're asking your employees to just go in and push buttons, you're also part of the problem. I think it's maybe that self-analysis of everybody but Bob the Lizard, that we're all human and need to treat our lives with as much respect as we think that our work should be valued at.
Borrowed that one too, man. That's pretty good.
Sure. Kind of wrapping up here, what do you see you're doing next? Like you got, your agency. Like, are you looking to personally scale that? Are you looking to add, develop it into like a robust lifestyle business? You want to, build it up to X level and sell it? Like, what's that pace look like personally for you?
I'm a big annuity guy. So I see it being 25 people, kind of max. I want to be able to provide a really good service to the customers we have. And I do want to take the first 25 employees or so at a company and just treat them really well. I think once the company gets too big, and I don't know what too big is, it gets hard to treat people really well because the company's just big and just got all these people in it. And I think, you got 25 or so people and they all agree that we should do work and work should not take over our lives, which is a big thing for me. Your work should not take over your life, but you should be able to be treated well, financially and with your time and with everything else you need to do. That's kind of my goal for the company is about 25 people, be able to treat those people really well, be able to treat the customers really well. Not a huge exit guy because I've been the implementer on the other side of the huge exits, and it's just, oh man, that's tough. You're taking people who are doing something, and then they got some hedge fund guys who are just flipping a switch. This has to be incredible, super fast. Great, it'll work, but that's what people are doing. It's just not the kind of thing that I want to do. So, like I said, treat those 25 people really well. I'm a big Buffett guy, so we have a portfolio kind of internally based on those principles, and I think that's what will happen to this business. I think we'll probably tap out at 130 customers or so that we're treating really well, make some products scale better than services anyway, and then move on with my life. One of the things I tell my wife is that I have been working since I was 14 years old. So I've seen almost every flavor of work. I've washed cars, I've bussed tables, I've worked at Pizza Hut, worked at McDonald's, been an engineer, been a project manager, technical project manager, CEO. Like I've just seen a bunch of stuff. I'm tired. I want to be able to treat some people really well and then kind of step outside of it and go, hey, my wife loves to travel. So it'll probably be that.
That's awesome. I've been there. I started as a tour guide at a apple orchard teaching people to throw knives and tomahawks. At age 14, it was fun. But also, I love that viewpoint of, there is kind of a return, a structure of the jobs that we create, of companies and the scale and size. There's always this thing that a lot of marketers look for and seek for. It's like clarity of purpose and branding and being able to communicate that. And there's always an inherent like burr to that of like, but your company is so big, how do you communicate, that that value stays the same with all of those people once you get to that size? And that is extremely difficult to execute. It's much easier at service level businesses, if you're installing concrete walls, precast concrete walls, then you can make sure that your teams stay small, you communicate with the direct supervisors and make sure everybody's getting paid well enough to care enough about their jobs to do it well, to take pride in it. And it's antithetical to the general drive of there's corporatist concept of we must grow at all costs. Profit must come. And I think a more healthy attitude is growth is good, but growth should be shared. And that setting that value is the responsibility of leadership at the outset and might be something that, some owners just don't have that mentality. I've worked with old school business people who, they're just a cold, what is it from Christmas Carol, a hard, cold hand at the grindstone. You
Yeah,
know,
man.
they're worrying about the Bob Cratchit spending enough time and how much they're spending on coal. And it doesn't matter how profitable the last season was, it will never be good enough.
Yeah, and I think for me, along the way in all of that work, I started like I'm poverty. So I'm from a place called Cordial, Georgia. And depending on when you check, it's one of the poorest counties minimum in the state of Georgia. So, start in poverty. Go to Georgia Tech, work my way through it, figure it out, get into corporate, figure out what I don't know and all this kind of stuff, right? But I have this incredible reference point of, I grew up with people who worked in factories. And hey, the factories moved. And when you're there, it's like this tremendous impact on people. And then when you go to school, you see the technical term for it. And it's like, whoa, like I've seen hundreds of people be impacted by a textbook term in systems engineering. And so you get that reference of I lived in this thing and now I know why it happened at a balance sheet kind of level, right? Or TML, whichever one you want to talk about. And for me, it becomes, oh, okay, like I saw it. I mean, I kind of saw the end of the game somewhat. So then I went, the game that I want to play is this one. And, look, I'm not saying that I'm like charity bound because I don't run a charity, but, I think that I have an understanding of kind of what I want. And I also don't kid myself about why people come to work. It's really interesting to me when people start talking about families and all that stuff. And it's like, hey, man,
Your work
let's be
is your
honest.
family. No, it's not. My family's my family. My coworkers don't mean, they're not my best friends. We might go get a drink, but it's not where I live. Like,
Like,
you build your home and you have a business. Hopefully, you want to get along with your coworkers, but I always hated that. Oh, I take care of that paternalism of like the owner company. I treat you as my family. Like, you pay your mom this little amount of money compared to how much you're making. Really?
well, it's like I tell people don't compare yourself to my family. I got a lot of family members I don't talk to, so don't do that. I got a bunch of friends I don't talk to. But I look at people and go, man, when you looked up this job, you were probably looking because you had some bills to pay, or you're frustrated about something, or you needed this job to provide you something. And I don't kid myself about that. I think I'm pretty cool to work with. I think I try to have fun. I try to get out of people's way. But I don't kid myself that if I stopped paying you, you would be here.
You're not my family at my work because I respect you more than that.
I got plenty, probably about 85% of that family that, on the do not call list.
Hilarious. Well, tell me what's if you got any cool things coming out? Are you doing any conferences, writing any books, coming out on any other podcasts? Have any resources that you're giving out to your clients that I can add to show notes or what you've been cooking?
We have a so we're in the middle of a marketing accelerator now. I had to hire a marketing coordinator because I was doing a terrible job of being the marketing coordinator. We have a we'll just call it a guide, or it's a statistical analysis of what customers have asked us. We got about 2,100 tickets in there, and we went through and went, hey, what is the core of what people are asking us? Because we want to be able to communicate with prospects that, hey, this is what you're likely going to get from the service. It's not going to be the super technical thing most of the time. These are the things that people like you struggle with. So if you look on our site, it's called the Salesforce Truth Report. Probably about a 10-page document that just goes through what people in 25 to 100 person companies get out of us, what they ask for over time. Other than that, we're about to lean a lot heavier into, about to say it like I don't know it, LinkedIn and a true content calendar. And what I told everybody internally is it's just going to be my voice. So same voice of coming across on this is going to come across on the content. I got no reason to pretend like I'm somebody else. So if you're into somebody who's kind of a direct jerk, look around and see that.
I like it. I like it. So I'll make sure to add a link to your resources in the show notes. Thanks so much for your time. It's been a great conversation. I've really appreciated insight, and I'll see you around. Thanks.
Thank you for having me, sir.